This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2015, held at Faith Builders on August 4 through 7.
I'm Jason Crouch. This is my wife, Gloria, and our two oldest children. Cody's standing outside the door. You'll see him more later, and our daughter, Jasenia. And we just thought it would be interesting to start with a little skit to sort of depict what life can be like. For me, and I hope you can relate to it as well. It's been a busy day here at school. So far, we had to send one student home sick, and then while I was on the phone with a patron, I had to practically hang up on them because another student showed up at the door looking like he needed my trash can. He's now in the sick cot, and I called his parents to come and get him. What was I doing before all that interruption? Oh, yeah, Matt had texted me with some names for teacher suggestions for teachers for next year. We need three teachers. I really need to reply to him. Hi, this is Jason.
Hi, Jason. This is Linda. I really liked that you taught in Sunday school class on Sunday, and I was wondering if I could have a copy of your notes to use when I teach a class in the prison. At the prison 3 days from now.
Sure, I can get those to you. I can probably bring them Wednesday night to prayer meeting. I'll tell you what, if you could text me your email address, that might be easier.
Okay, sure.
All right. Hi, this is Jason.
Hi, Jason. This is Julie calling. I'm planning to go to college this fall, and I was wondering if you could send my high school transcript.
Sure, I'll say something to Petrina. I'm sure she can get those together for you this week, or maybe might be the beginning of next week, but we'll get those to you.
Thanks.
School day is winding down, and students are beginning the cleanup jobs that they do at the end of the day. Jaron comes running into my office to tell me that there's a lot of water on the floor in the guy's bathroom. So I go down to assess, and sure enough, there are several inches of water on the floor in the guy's bathroom. Somehow the toilet got stuck open and it got plugged and something, yeah, it was a mess. So I went and got the large bucket and the mop to start mopping it up, since that's part of my job description. I'm in the process of cleaning up the mess. While I'm doing that, a teacher walks by and wonders if she could talk to me after school. She had some student issues that day that she wasn't sure how to handle and just wanted to get my perspective on it. So I said, sure, once I'm done here, we can talk. Took about 2 hours to clean up that mess. After that time, I went and found the teacher, and we talked about the student that she had trouble with that day and how to work with him, how to handle him. Get done with her, get back to my office, and try to think about what I'm supposed to do now, what I was trying to do. And I remember that I need to call the Burkholder family about setting up a new patron interview with them for next year. They want to send their children to our school. Hi, this is Jason.
Hi, Jason. This is Steve. I was wondering if you got a chance to work on who's coming to give the Sunday evening program on July 29th.
Well, I called a couple people, but I haven't got anybody to commit yet. Still working on that.
Okay, that's fine. I was also thinking that we should schedule another meeting to plan the next 6 months' worth of Sunday evening services. Do you have any evening that's open?
Monday evening I have a meeting, a board meeting. I could do it Tuesday night, but I'd prefer to keep that open if I can. Of course, Wednesday night's prayer meeting. I could do it Thursday evening.
Okay, that sounds good. Thanks.
All right. Time's gotten away so quickly. It's time to head home already. As I'm traveling home, I get a text from a parent who's wants to send their children to our school next year, wondering if they could use our bus, if the bus could go out of the way a little bit to pick their children up, or if they would need to use public busing or run their children to school, which they prefer not to do. So I make a mental note that I'll have to check where they live, talk to the bus driver, and work all that out. Pull into home. It's a relief to be home. As I'm coming up the driveway, though, I see there's a tarp laying in the yard, still has scraps of steel and shingles laying on it from replacing the shed roofs. It's been there for about a week. I know I got to get that cleaned up or it's going to kill the grass. You can't just lay tarps in the yard. So I make another mental note to have the boys take care of that or take care of it myself sometime. I walk in the door.
Welcome home, dear. How was your day?
Busy.
Did you get everything accomplished on your to-do list?
No, not even close.
I was working on a basement door. I've only been wanting to put in for 6 years. I was watching YouTube videos, but I got stuck. Can you come help me?
Cody. I don't really have time for that right now, but tell you what, I'll give you 30 minutes. But after supper, I really need to study for Sunday school. Hi, this is Jason.
Hi, Jason. This is Sam. Would you mind leading songs on Sunday morning?
Well, I'm actually teaching the youth Sunday school class. I mean, I probably can. Have you tried everyone else?
No, I haven't. I'll try some others.
Okay, well, if you can't find anyone, let me know. I probably could do it.
Thanks.
About this time, Jason and Robbie, our younger two boys, come busting in the door.
Hey, Dad, can you take us to Brookside Bikes? The chains on both of our bikes are broken. We haven't been able to ride them for weeks.
Can I just have 5 minutes of quiet? I don't know if that's feels like real life or not. That all is real life for me. Didn't all happen in one day, of course, but yeah, that's how life feels sometimes. Like we have so much to do. So much to do. Just can't keep up. We're busy people. And they say that if you want to get something done, you ask a busy person. I wish that wasn't true. Because sometimes it does feel that way. Like I'm already up to here. And then somebody says, hey, could you do this? Could you do that? Good stuff. We're busy people. People are exhausted. Like the mother of four from LaGrange, Illinois, who said, I'm so tired, my idea of a vacation is a trip to the dentist. I just can't wait to sit in that chair and relax. Hope it's not quite that bad. But people are stressed. Like the neurosurgeon who quit medicine to open a bagel shop. Some days that looks pretty appealing. He was like, go make bagels or something. People are breaking the speed limit of life. Like the man who confessed, I feel like a minnow in a flash flood. And where did I lay that book? Dr. Richard Swenson, in his book, The Overload Syndrome, writing about himself, he says, everything had become a burden. Medicine and patients, caring and serving. How could so many good things bring such pain? We were not involved in anything that was bad, nothing unsuccessful, nothing selfish, nothing evil. We were meeting needs everywhere we turned. Yet life was obviously out of control. Joy dried up and blew away. Buoyancy sank. Enthusiasm evaporated. Rest was a theoretical concept. My passion for medical practice shriveled to the size of a dehydrated pea. I'm assuming, like I said, that most of you, if not all of you, are principals. And as principals, I don't know if you have a job description or not of what you're supposed to be or do as a principal. But whether you have a job description or not, there are things that you're supposed to do that are not on that job description. Or things that just fall into your lap because you're the principal. And somebody has to take care of the toilets that overflow in the boys' bathroom. We don't have an on-site janitor. That'd be nice. But we don't have that. Somebody has to take care of the children who throw up on the carpet in the copier room. All these things that happen that just somebody has to do. I want to read another little story out of this book. A story you've heard before. Tolstoy, "How Much Land Does a Man Need?" Tolstoy tells of the ambitious peasant Pakom, who, after gaining ever greater plots of land, finally heard of a wonderful deal in a far-off country. He traveled to the land of the Bakshirs and negotiated with the village elder, who seemed a fool. The elder told Pakom that he could have all the land he wanted for 1,000 rubles a day. Pakom did not understand. What kind of rate is that? A day? How many acres would that be? The elder replied, "We don't reckon your way. We sell by the day. However much you can walk around in one day will be yours." When Pakom expressed that a man can walk around much land in one day, the elder burst out laughing. "And all of it will be yours," he replied. But there was one condition. If Pakom didn't return to the starting point by sundown, the money would be forfeited. Ecstatic, Pakom spent a sleepless night. Rising at dawn, he went with the elders to the top of a hill, where the elder put down his hat. After placing his 1,000 rubles on top of the hat, Pakom began walking, digging holes along the way to mark his land. The going was easy, and he thought, "I'll do another 3 miles and then turn left. The land's so beautiful here, it would be a pity to miss any." Pakom hurried throughout the morning, going out of his way to add more land. But at noon, when he looked back at the hill where he had begun, it was difficult to see the people. "Maybe I've gone too far," he worried, and decided he must begin to make shorter sides. As the afternoon wore on, the heat was exhausting. By now, his bare feet were cut and bruised, and his legs weakened. He wanted to rest, but that was out of the question. Pakom struggled on, walking faster than running. He worried that he had been too greedy, and his fear made him breathless. On he ran, his shirt soaked and his throat parched. His lungs were working like a blacksmith's bellows. His heart beat like a hammer. He was terrified. "All this strain will be the death of me," he thought. Although Pakom feared death, he couldn't stop. "They'd call me an idiot," he thought. When he was close enough to hear the Bakshirs cheering, he summoned his last ounce of strength and kept running. As he finally reached the hill, everything suddenly became dark. The sun had set. Pakom groaned. He wanted to stop, but heard the Bakshirs still cheering him on. He realized that from where he was at the bottom of the hill, the sun had set, but not for those on top. Pakom took a deep breath and rushed up the hill. Reaching the top, he saw the elder sitting by the hat, laughing his head off. Pakom's legs gave way, and he fell forward, grasping the cap. "Oh, well done," exclaimed the elder. "That's a lot of land you've earned yourself." Pakom's help worker ran up and tried to lift his master, but Pakom was dead. The worker picked up Pakom's spade, dug a grave, and buried him, 6 feet from head to heel, exactly the amount of land a man needed. And I read that story because Pakom didn't realize what the Bakshirs did. The Bakshirs knew we have limits. There's only so much you can do in a day's time. And Pakom thought he could squeeze a little more in, and it killed him, literally. We don't realize we have limits, but sometimes that's because it feels like we're not allowed to have limits, because people expect us to do so much. And you maybe could compare our life, compare your existence to a raft floating down a river. The raft is your life. And as you begin to float down the river, pretty peaceful, pretty calm, a nice little ride down the river. Of course, you're aware that there's water around your raft. You're on the river. And as you float along, the raft stays the same. It doesn't change. But the river does. Very slow, almost imperceptible, but you begin to realize that the water's moving a little bit faster than it had been. And the river gets deeper, but you don't see that because you're just floating on top. The river gets wider, but again, very slowly. And we're not aware of the changes, just day-to-day changes. The river begins to get rougher. The waves get higher. The shoreline is barely perceptible and goes by in a blur. And we start to grow uneasy, but we're still on the raft. And it's the same raft. The raft hasn't changed. And our lives can be like that. Our lives float in a culture. And our lives continue to be the same 24-hour days. It doesn't change. Work 8 hours or more. Sleep 7 hours or less. Eat 3 times. And all the while, the cultural flow becomes faster, rougher, and blurred. But we comfort ourselves because we're still on the raft, and the raft hasn't changed. And we pretend that nothing else has changed either, even though we know life is going faster and faster. But we try to comfort ourselves by saying, well, there's nothing new under the sun. Until we plummet over the falls. And I'm convinced from my own experience, from reading, from hearing other people talk, that if we aren't aware of our limits, and if we aren't careful with our time and our commitments, we will plummet over the falls. It will happen. And I had a picture that I'm not techie enough to use a PowerPoint yet. I still use Sly. Transparencies. And I had a picture of a man swimming, snorkeling actually. But he's completely surrounded by minnows. And I forgot to bring it down. I print it out. But he's surrounded by these minnows, and sometimes life feels that way. Like we're just surrounded with so many things, and we're supposed to be able to discern out of all those minnows which ones we're supposed to catch and which ones to let go. And if we're going to succeed amidst all the pressures that we face, we're going to have to be able to do that. We're going to have to be able to discern which minnows to catch and which ones to let go. Richard Swenson, again, in his book, The Overload Syndrome, says when stress is pushed to the extremes, burnout results. He says next time you go into a forest, take a small sapling and bend it over and then let go of it. What happens? It just springs back up. But if you take that same sapling and bend it until it breaks, until it snaps, and then let go, what happens? It stays there. And he says, this is a picture of burnout. Our lives are the same way. Our lives, we adapt. But if we aren't careful, we eventually get to the point where something inside snaps. And he says, when this happens, healing comes slowly. Quoting Dr. Swenson, he says, I personally do not believe we ever get back to the same level of enthusiasm, innocence, and passion that we previously had. Yes, there is life after burnout, but most of the healing is by scar formation. So I hope that none of you have experienced that kind of burnout. I don't know your stories, most of you. And I hope you never have to experience that. I hope you don't, I was going to say get to that point, but allow yourself to get to that point. You've probably seen diagrams similar to that before. Important and not important, the urgent and not urgent. And I colored the different quadrants. Some things are urgent, but not important. They're urgent. They make a lot of noise. They squeak loudly. But they're not really that important. And those kinds of things need to be let go. Or, if you have to, delegate those tasks. I colored that quadrant yellow because yellow means be cautious, be careful. And it's those in my experience, it's those kinds of things that distract me from what really is important. All these urgent things that aren't really that important, but they seem important because they're making lots of noise right now. But that's not really your emergency. Delegate that stuff if it's not important. Some things are important, but not really urgent. They're important things that need to happen, need to be done, need to be taken care of, but they're not in your face every day making lots of noise. In fact, those kinds of things tend not to make any noise. But if you ignore them, they'll come and bite you. They'll get you. And with these kinds of tasks, you need to plan. The ones that are important but not urgent, you have to plan. Or they'll become urgent. Then there's things that aren't urgent or important, and they're the ones that are easy to let go. I color that one red because those things, they're not in your face making noise. They're not really important. They're easy to let go. Limit those kinds of things. If you don't eliminate them, they tend to become urgent but not important if you're not careful with those kinds of activities. But, yeah, they're relatively easy to ignore. The ones we really need to focus on are the ones that are urgent and important. These are vitally important, and they deserve, and usually they receive immediate attention, but not always. Because sometimes we get distracted by these things down here that are urgent but not important. But these are the things that must be done, the crucial, critical things. And those things need to be managed. If we don't manage these crises, we get in big trouble. I borrowed this from Stephen Covey's book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And I don't endorse everything he says, but found this to be helpful. We have the urgent things and the important things. These are the crises, the project deadlines, the crying child. A crying child is urgent. It's making noise right now. You hear it. It's also important. You need to take care of crying children. The urgent but not important things. Cell phones. Cell phones ring and they make noise. And my phone is set that if I get a text, I think it's every 2 minutes, it makes a noise until I do something about it. And my wife won't like this, but she said it that way. Because she would text me, and if I didn't have my phone with me or whatever, I didn't even know she texted. Until, 45 minutes later, I happened to look at my phone. Oh, my. Oh, yeah, you texted me. And sometimes it was urgent and important things. But cell phones, shows the age of his book, PDA alarms, interruptions, most emails, household chores. These things are urgent, but they're not that important. You can't ignore it most of the time. And it won't matter that much. Important but not urgent, self-care. Quiet time, exercise, etc. Family and friends, long-term projects, financial planning, recreation and fun. And then the ones down here that are not important, not urgent, indiscriminate, internet, email, social networking. Those kinds of things, not bad in themselves, but they're not really important and not as urgent. Time wasters, daydreaming. There's a place for all of those things. But they're not important, not urgent. But we have to limit, we have to be careful with our time. I'd like to talk about three key relationships that we have to nurture if we're going to avoid plummeting over the falls. And the first one I want to talk about is our relationship with God. Gordon MacDonald, in his book, Ordering Your Private World, which I highly recommend, says, if we are ever to develop a spiritual life that gives contentment, it will be because we approach spiritual living as a discipline. If we are ever to develop a spiritual life that gives contentment, it will be because we approach spiritual living as a discipline. It's not going to just happen. Our spiritual life is one of these things up here in the green quadrant. But it should be, but it tends to be over here in the blue, where it's important. We know, I mean, if I would ask you, you would say, well, yeah, that's important. But it's not urgent. It's not ringing like your phone does in your face. But I think our relationship with God is crucial. And Jesus himself invites us to come to him and find rest in life. Matthew 11:28, come unto me all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, learn of me. John 10:10, he says, I am come that they might have life and that they might have it more abundantly. So he invites us to come to him himself to find rest, to find life. Important relationship. I want to just talk a little bit about four essential spiritual disciplines. And these are not original with me. Four essential spiritual disciplines. The first one is the pursuit of solitude and silence. The pursuit of solitude and silence. And I use the word pursuit intentionally, because it's not something that just happens, especially if you're married and have any children. It can be hard to find time to be quiet and alone. Someone said God doesn't ordinarily shout to make himself heard. As Elijah learned, he more often uses a still small whisper, just a quiet voice. But you won't hear it unless you get quiet. Scripture says, be still and know that I'm God. But you've got to be still, first of all. And it's hard for us to do that. Mother Teresa said, God is the friend of silence. We need silence to be able to touch souls. And as principals, that's our job, to touch souls. Probably many of you teach as well as serving as principal. And yeah, you're there to teach math and history and science and Bible and all this, these subjects, but most importantly, you're there to touch souls, to impact these young people, little people. And if we don't take time and take care of and nurture this relationship, we can't be effective. And I think, and probably, the younger you are, the harder it is, I think, to do this. We are so used to noise and noise pollution. I mean, we're surrounded by noise all the time. You can't even walk into an elevator and ride an elevator in silence. They got music playing. You call some place and they put you on hold. It's not quiet. They got to play music. In the stores, there's music. Sometimes I wonder if you can really call it that, but we're just so used to noise. A lot of people. You jump in the car, turn on the stereo. It's just automatic. You just start the car, hit the button, power button. And most of us, too many of us, don't know how to be silent. We're uncomfortable with silence. Most of you are looking at me now wondering, what's he doing? He was quiet. And if I would do that for 5 minutes, you don't normally do that in middle workshops, but would start to get uncomfortable. Like, what are we supposed to do? He's not saying anything. He's not doing anything. Are we supposed to be doing something? Or what? He might start looking around at other people to see what they're doing. Now, granted, this is a workshop. And like I said, we don't normally do that in workshops, but too many of us are uncomfortable with silence, I think. We've forgotten how to enjoy silence and solitude. Wayne Oates says, if you and I ever have silence in our noisy hearts, we're going to have to grow it. You can nurture silence in your noisy heart if you value it, cherish it, and are eager to nourish it. It doesn't happen automatically. And I think maybe part of the problem is that sometimes we equate solitude and silence with laziness or incompetence. Like, you really should be doing something. Not just sitting around staring or whatever you're doing. Especially because there's all this urgent stuff staring us in the face all the time. And you never get all, you know, get the checklist all checked off. Seems like you check one off and there's two more gets added on the bottom. And so for me, even when I try to do this, my mind automatically starts thinking about all the stuff that I got to do. And I should be doing. Oh yeah, that's right, I got to take care of that. I mean, even last night, I crawled into bed. And I'm laying there for a little bit and all of a sudden, oh man. I thought of something that I'd forgotten to do yesterday. Because it got quiet. My mind started thinking about that. But we have to pursue solitude and silence. Second essential spiritual discipline is regular listening to God. Regular listening to God. How do you listen to God? Every time I talk about this with students, they always go, how do you do that? How do you hear God? Like, I never heard God. Well, I've never heard God in an audible voice either. I know people that have, but I never have. That'd be nice. I wish He would sometimes. But He doesn't talk to us that way. But I'm convinced that every time we open the Scriptures, that's a way that He talks to us. When the preacher or teacher of Scripture, filled with and directed by God's Spirit, brings instruction, God is speaking to us. Journal keeping. I don't know if you keep a journal or not, but I've found that to be an excellent way of listening to God. Because as I write, and I actually don't write, I'll confess I use a computer because I can type faster than I can write. So I can type my thoughts better that way, faster. But as I type, I'm thinking about what's going on, what I'm feeling, what happened yesterday maybe, or what I'm going to have to do today. And as I do that, I kind of process that God speaks to me. I begin to hear God speaking as I search my heart and what's in there. Probably most of you know the song, I Come to the Garden Alone. While the dew is still on the roses, and the voice I hear falling on my ear, the Son of God discloses. And He walks with me, and He talks with me. And He tells me I am His own. And the joy we share as we tarry there, none other has ever known. Second verse says, He speaks, and the sound of His voice is so sweet, the birds hush their singing. And the melody that He gave to me within my heart is ringing. Austin Miles wrote that song. But the interesting thing about that, he wrote that song in a cold, dreary, and leaky basement in New Jersey that didn't have a view of a garden. It didn't even have a window in it. And yet, in that cold, dreary, leaky basement, he heard the voice of God. And he came to the garden, he called it, in his heart. The place where he heard God and God spoke to him. Third spiritual discipline I think we have to cultivate is reflection and meditation. Experience of reflection and meditation. See, it's possible for us to hear things and not really hear them. Sometimes with our children, I'll say, did you hear what I said? Yeah. But they didn't really. Because sometimes then I'll ask them, well, what did I say? And they're not sure. Or they'll say something, but it's not what I said. It might be kind of close, but it's not what I said. And so we have the ability to hear things without really internalizing them or allowing them to impact our lives. And I think if God's Word and God's Spirit are going to have any impact on our lives, we have to allow time for it to soak in. The fourth essential spiritual discipline is prayer as worship and intercession. Somewhat related to listening to God, because one of the ways we listen is through prayer, but prayer as worship and intercession. We know, Jesus said in John 15, that apart from Him we can do nothing. We know that. And we know that we're supposed to produce godly fruit. John also talks about, you know, we're part of the vine and we're supposed to bring forth fruit. And he talks about what happens if we don't bring forth fruit. And we know what the fruit of the Spirit is. We're supposed to produce this fruit. But only as we abide in Christ. And abide means to continue to be present with Him throughout your day. As we continue to be present with Him and one with Him, only then can we produce this fruit. And I'll just say this, I'm convinced that prayer is essentially self-surrender, true prayer. I think of Jesus in the garden before His crucifixion, and He was honest with His Father. He said, if there's any way you can take this cup away, please. But He always came back. Not my will. Not my will. Self-surrender. Just a couple of practical tips here about this relationship with God. Schedule it. Schedule regular times of reading the Bible, talking and listening to God, reflecting on what He's doing. And that's really the only tip I have for that one. But schedule it. Find a time that works for you. I'm not a morning person. I hate mornings. I do. If I would have life my way, we'd all stay up till 11:30, 12 o'clock at night and sleep in till 10 o'clock in the morning. I could function that way real well. Yeah, we're on the same page. All right. But the world doesn't work that way. We're supposed to start work at 8 o'clock or whatever, 8:30, school starts and so forth. But when I was young, before I was married, I liked, because I'm a night person, I would usually have my quiet time in the evening. After I got married, and especially after we started having children, that didn't work as well. I learned that if I tried to wait till evening, it just didn't happen, because my wife wants to talk, and I want to talk with her, and the children have needs, and it just didn't happen. So I force myself to get up earlier in the morning. I hate it, but I know I need it. I usually set my alarm for 5 o'clock because I want that time with God. So the first key relationship that we need to cultivate is our relationship with God. The second key relationship is a relationship with our families. I think the relationship with our families is probably the easiest to neglect because they're so forgiving. I told my wife the other day that I think my calling as a teacher and administrator, I think has been more of a sacrifice for her than for me. Because at least I get to go to school and enjoy teaching and there's a certain amount of prestige that comes with the position as principal. Not that that's what I want, but it does. And people often will thank me for what I do at school. They don't thank her very often. They don't think about it. And because my wife and our children understand the importance of my calling, I think that they're much more forgiving, and therefore it's easier for me to neglect them. But I'll just say this, pay attention. When your husband or your wife or your children or your parents tell you they think you're too busy, pay attention to that. And maybe you need to go ask them. Or somebody close to you, somebody that knows you well. Pay attention to that. Some practical tips. And I sent out an email to a bunch of other administrators on a Google group and asked for their advice here. So I'm going to share some of what they said. Well, one of the things I do is when I have an evening meeting, board meeting or finance committee meeting or any other kind of evening meeting, I make it a point to get home at least an hour earlier than normal. I try to leave school 3:15. School gets out at 3. I try to leave by 3:15, but that doesn't always happen. But unless it's a real important and urgent thing, I will make sure I leave at least an hour earlier than normal just to go home, have extra time with the family before I have to go off to my meeting. Daryl Weaver, who's administrator at Ephrata Mennonite School, said, "One thing that has worked for me is Dad Day. Wednesday afternoons, I would try to leave school by 3:30 or 4 o'clock and spend an hour or so with one of my children in one-on-one time before supper. An ice cream cone, a stop at the park, a salad at McDonald's, a game of mini-golf, a visit to the library. These were all activities that meant a lot to my children. It was tough to prioritize that and easy to skip. But after about a year, staff started catching on and would say, 'Oh, wait, you aren't available Wednesday afternoons, are you?'" Clayton Schenck, who's the administrator at Tidings of Peace School in York, Pennsylvania, said, "We have family night every Monday night. From 6 p.m. supper till 9 p.m. bedtime, no meetings, just family time. We also do a teen encounter monthly. Mom and I take the teenagers out for supper." Daniel Huber from Plainview Bible Fellowship School in Texas said, "We keep Saturdays pretty much blocked open for family time and family projects of all kinds, work, recreation, etc. We find that the key to making this work is to have the gut to say no to many other fine things, even things that seem more holy than just being together as a family. Things that we're asked to do on Saturdays. The answer is no, 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 and thank you. Because family is soon grown and flown." So, take time for your relationship with God. Take time for your relationship with your families. The third key relationship that I think we have to take care of is our relationship with ourselves. And that might sound a little bit odd, or maybe even a little bit selfish. But if we don't take care of ourselves, if we don't take time to nourish our inner soul, we're never going to make it. And what do I mean by nourish our inner soul? Just things like just sitting on the recliner or out on the patio in the morning or whatever. Last couple weeks here, we've had some really beautiful mornings at our place. Cool, nice cool air. And I just went out and sat on the patio for a while. Didn't take any books, no phone, no laptop. Just sat out there before the rest of the family got up. It's refreshing. Things like reading a book. Maybe just doing nothing. Sit and stare time. Go for a hike in the mountains without your cell phone. Whatever it takes. But we have to take care of ourselves. Jesus did that. He would regularly slip away from the crowds just to have time alone. Mark 1:35, "In the early morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, went away to a secluded place and was praying there. Luke 6:12 and 13. It was at this time that he went off to the mountain to pray, and he spent the whole night in prayer to God. And when day came, he called his disciples to him and chose 12 of them, whom he also named as apostles. So before he did this work of calling these 12 disciples, he took time for himself, nourishing himself, taking care of himself. And we have to take care of our physical bodies too. And I find this easy to neglect. But we need to exercise regularly. And I don't ask my wife, but I do really bad at that. I know I should, okay? It's one of these important but not urgent things, and so I tend to let it go. But it helps. Just some exercise. Someone suggested, I think it might have been Steve Brubaker, but I remember someone suggesting one time that we need to set aside 1 week per year, 1 day per month, and 1 hour per week to get away by ourselves. No interruptions, just to focus, refocus, and reflect. A week a year, a day a month, an hour per week. Take time, even schedule time for the things that you enjoy. Because again, if we don't schedule it, it tends to just, you know, there's so much other stuff that seems more important. But we need to take care of our relationship with ourselves. Take care of ourselves, our bodies, our spirits. And I want to give you three words to help you. First word is evaluate. With all this stuff, and again, I wish I had the picture of the man swimming in the minnows, all these minnows around us, and we're supposed to know which ones are important, which ones we can let go. How do you do that? Well, it's constant evaluation. Evaluating our commitments. Dr. J. Grant Howard says, some people can't say no. They enroll in too many courses, hold down too many jobs, volunteer for too many tasks, make too many appointments, serve on too many committees, have too many friends. They're trying to be all things to all people all at once, all by themselves. So evaluate your commitments. Evaluate your teachers. Kendall Myers from Waynesboro Mennonite School in Georgia, one of the presenters here this week, says, I suppose all principals do this, but one of the things I've tried to do is drop in on our teachers in their classroom after school dismisses for the day and ask about their day. I don't usually do more than one per afternoon, and many times I haven't even done that, but I try to make my way around the various classrooms throughout the week. I find that when I go to them, rather than just wait until they come to me in frustration with an issue, it helps to keep those wheels from becoming squeaky as often. So evaluate your teachers. Evaluate your limits. How do you know when you're approaching the threshold of your limits? Well, if you're at 80% of your limits, I'll give you three scenarios. Your boss asks, can you work overtime this week? Weekend? If you're at 80% limit, you'll respond by saying, I'd be glad to. I enjoy my work, I've got the time, and besides, who couldn't use a little extra money? If you're at 80% full, your church asks, can you teach Sunday school? And you would respond, sure. It's great fun to be around children and a privilege to teach them. Your spouse asks, can we go out to eat with the neighbors? And your response would be, that would be great. We've waited to get together with them for months now. If you're at 100% full, and your boss asks, could you work overtime this weekend? Your response would probably be more like, I'm not sure. Let me think about it. I'll get back to you. Oh, I guess I can. Your church asks, can you teach Sunday school? And your response might be, you know, that's something I've always wanted to do. I'm kind of busy right now. Let me think it over and I'll let you know next week. And your spouse asks, can we go out to eat with the neighbors? And your response would be, I don't think so, honey. Not this week anyway. Let's think about it for next week. If you're at 120% of your limits, and your boss asks, can you work overtime this weekend? No! As a matter of fact, I quit. I'm tired of people dumping their problems on me. And your church asks, could you teach Sunday school? Are you kidding? I hate children. And your spouse asks, can we go out to eat with the neighbors? I've got a better idea. Let's pull down the shades and pretend we're not home. Again, I hope you're not there. I don't think you are, but your limits. Evaluate your limits. Second word to help is delegate. Delegate. You don't have to be all things to all people all the time, all by yourself. Sometimes it feels that way, but we don't have to be. Steve Weber from Otter Lake Christian School in Ontario said, sometimes we should be adjusting the load rather than oiling the wheel. Circle checks, getting out and walking around and checking things, are essential to understanding squeaks, even though the circumspection requires time, knowledge of the intended system, and getting out of the driver's seat, or your office or classroom. But I like that. Delegate. Sometimes we should be adjusting the load rather than oiling the wheel. Richard Thieme says, when we do two things simultaneously, we take about 30% off of our attention off the primary task. I don't know if you talk on the phone while you're driving or not. You don't need to answer, but according to him, if you do, you're taking 30% of your attention off the primary task, which is driving your car. So delegate. You can be much, much more effective this way. One of my board members just recently showed this to me. Same amount of energy is being expended from each of these circles. The difference is in how is being expended. This person is trying to be all things to all people all the time, all at once, all by themselves. And they're not really getting much of anything done. Just a little bit here, a little there, kind of a little something. This person is focused on one thing. And they're getting a whole lot more done. Now, that's oversimplified because, practically speaking, you can't always do that. But the point is, if we can focus, and if we can delegate some of these other responsibilities to other people, we can get a lot more done, be a lot more effective. So we need to evaluate, constant evaluation. We need to delegate. The third word is recreate. Recreate. Again, quoting from the Overload Syndrome, Dr. Richard Swenson, I think I would not be far wrong if I were to postulate that our sense of the presence of God is in inverse proportion to the pace of our lives. Our sense of the presence of God is in inverse proportion to the pace of our lives. The faster the pace of our lives, the lower our sense of the presence of God. Did you ever notice that Jesus never seemed to be in a hurry? I mean, he gets the message that Lazarus is sick. You would think, this is his friend. You would think he would rush over there and heal the guy. But he didn't. He waited several days. He waited long enough that Lazarus not only got sicker, but he died and was dead for 4 days before Jesus showed up. But he wasn't in a hurry. Recreate. Part of recreation is recreating ourselves is making sure we get enough sleep. In 1850, they say that the average American got 9.5 hours of sleep per night. By 1950, it had decreased to 8 hours. In 2013, it was down to 6.8 hours. And it would be interesting to do a survey here and see what your average hours of sleep per night are. And of course, we vary. Some people need more or less. But most of us need more sleep than what we get, I think. So make sure you get enough sleep. talked earlier about scheduling recreational time. I think it's also important that we schedule margin time. F.W. Borum, an English, actually Australian writer, said, "I believe one of the supreme aims of a man's life should be to secure a margin." What do I mean by margin? Well, it's that the difference between where you are and your limit. And if we're right up against the limit, it's not going to work for very long. And so we need to schedule in that margin. Don't answer the phone during supper. We don't, usually. Now, if we're expecting an important phone call, maybe we'll go check the caller ID and see who it is. But we try not to answer the phone during supper. That's our family time. If it's important, they can let a message. We have an answering machine. If it's not important, they don't let a message. Then it wasn't important, so... be willing to say, you know, I'm busy this evening. Even if the only thing on your schedule is just to be at home with your family. I've done that before too. Can't do it tonight. Not available. Because I designated that evening to be with the family. Or if it's just personal quiet time. Don't be afraid to say, I'm not available till such and such a time. Like I said, I usually set my alarm for 5. 6 o'clock, the rest of the family wakes up. If someone tries to call me before 6, again, unless it's really urgent, if it's one of my teachers, I'll probably answer, maybe, but I don't even always then. Because my cell phone has a voicemail on it, too. They can let a message. A very practical example from our lives. Our church still does 2 weeks of VBS in July. We both teach at VBS. We were on the committee to help plan VBS this year, and we're also in charge of the songs, the singing. The week before VBS and the week after VBS, we didn't schedule anything else. Because of the pressure of VBS. I mean, we love VBS. We just love it. And we get a lot of community children coming in. And some of them never hear gospel except for those 2 weeks of VBS. So we love it. But we don't schedule anything else. Because we're busy. We're busy the week before, we're busy recreating, getting ready. Preparing ourselves physically, preparing our lessons, but also preparing ourselves physically, emotionally, spiritually. The week after, we scheduled nothing else so that we could recover. So schedule that margin time. In conclusion, learn to wait on the Lord. Isaiah 40:13, they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. John Stott said, I've learned the necessity of stepping back, looking where I was going, and having a monthly quiet day to be drawn up into the mind of God. I've learned the necessity of stepping back, looking where I was going, and having a monthly quiet day to be drawn up into the mind of God. 2 books, and I told you about them already, but just Ordering Your Private World, Gordon MacDonald. Excellent book, very practical, ways to do a lot of what I was talking about here. And this book, The Overload Syndrome, by Richard Swenson. Very practical again. He talks about different things that push us to our limits and almost beyond, and then what to do about it. And he throws in some humor, like one of the things he suggested was to buy a phoneless cord. It works. I didn't get one of them yet, but, well, actually I did. It's right over here. I have just a couple minutes yet. I'd like to hear any tips you have that you'd like to share with the rest of us. How do you live intentionally?
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.